Okay, so this picture is just for fun. I'm not will be talking about yap and biological systems, but I'll talk about gap and system of disordered electrons. So here I probably don't need to explain all these introductory slides. I mean, we know them for a long time, all this information, and also has been repeated several times in this conference. So we're talking about a system where you have electrons essentially classical, can be considered as point charges sitting on certain sites with some random energies. And they have Coulomb interactions. And so because of this absence of motion, absence of kinetic energy, Coulomb interactions remain on screen in some sense. And so long-range interactions are long-range, 1 over r. And so long-range correlations persist in the system and affects the states near the Fermi level. And what happens, the gap develops, the Coulomb gap, which is the subject of my talk. And we will all know the argument which gives the upper level, upper bound for this density of states. It's this Efrashkovsky stability criterion, which says that if you have electrons with energy, so field states with energy epsilon I, and empty sites holes with energy epsilon j, then they cannot be too close to each other, right? We have to be separated by a distance, which is 1 over the difference in energies. So therefore, at low energies, this distance is large. We have to be far away. They're sparse. So density of states is depleted. Okay, and so this gives you the upper bound for the density of states. So you have this depletion. And the results for dimensions 3 and 2 are probably well known here. Okay, so in 3 dimensions, this argument gives you parabolic density of states. In 2D, linear. Okay, but maybe a little bit less known, the situation in 1D. Okay, because if 1D, if you look at this criterion for a strong disordered system, the characteristic scale of epsilon much larger than on-site Coulomb interaction, then if you look at this naively, this criterion is always satisfied. Because the typical this distance it scales as 1 over r as well. Or let's see. The typical distance, okay, if you have density of states, which you know, okay, the bare density of states. Okay, if you ask a question, what would be the average distance between two sites within certain energy range, epsilon? This typical distance will be obviously 1D, 1G naught over epsilon, which scales the same way as this guy. And for strong disorder, this is always larger. It's larger than this. So this looks like it's satisfied. And then if you're too careless, you would conclude then in 1D, there is no Coulomb gap. Okay, this is almost true. Okay, in fact, there is a gap, and has been shown by these people, for example. This density of state still goes to zero, but very slowly, logarithmically. So this is very narrow, but still, the statement that even in 1D, you have a non-perturbative situation, at the Fermi level, density of state is zero. So it's zero at all dimensions. Okay. So this logarithm comes from the fact that, I mean, this is too crude. You have to integrate. And then integration d over e gives you diverging log.
But is Mod and Efrashkovsky is the same in this case in one dimension?
The transport?
Yes.
Well, I guess if you really go inside of this gap, there will be logarithmic corrections to Mod law. But in one dimension, of course, variable range hopping is special. As you know, that rare events are important. So you have to define. So lack of self-origin, things like that.
Where this gap will enter?
This enter, I mean, in principle, it will enter transport as well, if you're careful. But it's logarithmic, so you have to be careful to extract it. If it's a strong gap, like power law gap, it's more evident, right? So, like if you have, so all the low energy properties of the system.
I just want to understand the statement. So the conductivity will have stronger than exponential decay. What is the, because there is cookie RV anyway.
Yeah, there is cookie RV anyway, right.
So the statement is that conductivity decays when temperature goes to zero quicker than exponential.
Yeah, it will be, well, maybe logarithmic correction.
Logarithmic correction to what?
So what Boris Altshuler is referring to is that, okay, this is not the topic of my talk.
Okay.
So I'll answer very quickly. If you want to know more, we can discuss. We have actually a new paper on that. So Boris referred to the following thing, that in variable range hopping, conductivity, okay, if you have no interactions, okay, is given by the Mott's law, right? Which is exponential minus some constant T naught over T to the power, let's call it gamma. And gamma is 1 over D plus 1. Okay? So if you use it, so for example, in 3 dimensions, it will be 1/4. So that's Mott's law, right? Boris referred to a fact which I mentioned, that one dimension is special. So putting d equal to 1 in this equation, strictly speaking, incorrect. So you would get 1/2 here. You would get 1/2 here, but this is incorrect because it neglects rare events. So the idea is that usually how it's derived, this type of formulas, is using percolation theory. So you have some critical network percolating for a sample. In one dimension, there is no percolation. And so this cluster, which is trying to be, can be cut. If you cut it in any place, you stop transfer through the entire system. So these cuts are really, really of course, are rare, but we have exponential large effect. So the correct formula for very long wires, let's say, this is a rare event. So to catch these rare events, you have to have very long systems. But if you have, like, say, infinite system, and you talk about conductivity of that system, not conductance, but conductivity, then indeed, this, I guess, first pointed by Kurki, Jarvi, or Jarvi, whatever, this is just this, okay? Now, if you have,
I'm sorry,
but
still, yeah. I'm sorry, still, logarithmic correction in Kurki, Jarvi, to what? To exponent or to the exponential factor?
I didn't study this because, as I said, this is kind of a regime to get Kurki, Jarvi. You have to be in very specific, either extremely long samples or very high temperature, in which case the range is very small. So from it's maybe theoretical.
But if it is not,
okay, this is not even topic of my talk. If we want to talk about transport,
I can. We will not even ask more. Does the column gap enter transport and how? No, just
okay. In order not to make any wrong statements, I would say that I did not study the effect of Coulomb gap on specifically 1D hopping. Okay? I have some ideas we can discuss, but I have not studied. I have some guesses. I think it will be affected, but how, I don't know. Okay? I think the effect will be weak. Okay? We can discuss. All right? So a better way to study it, maybe it will be some kind of tunneling or some other methods. But basically, this is a very fundamental property, density of states. It's a fundamental property, okay? So if you do all sorts of measurements, it will show up. So we want to calculate this constant. Yeah?
Just comment about this figure. I think by now it's known that this has nothing to do with the Coulomb gap, this particular.
Oh, this particular experiment?
Yes, yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay,
I mean,
well.
It's on an energy scale which is far too large. It's probably like an.
Yeah, there was something suspicious about this experiment, but it had. It made a nice plot, so I included.
Yeah.
So okay. If you have suggestions for better plot, I mean, better, more trustworthy, then it's okay. Okay. Anyway, so as I mentioned, Efrosh-Klosky argument gives you the upper bound. Okay, and then for 30 years, people have discussing what happens, what is actually true. So what's the problem here? So this stability criterion is basically a necessary criterion. You have to have it, but it's not sufficient. And physically, the reason what's missing is the following. So it's, I guess, pointed out first by Mott, maybe, or I don't know who. Or maybe you figured it out yourself. That there are, in principle, the rigorous stability criterion is this. Once you make this transition from occupied site I to the empty site J, okay, well, it's not the end of the story. You should also check that any further rearrangements of the particles doesn't lower your energy further. Okay, so physically you can view it sort of like a polarization, or the Tefferskos called polaronic shift. So this guy is a picture basically from the paper. These guys move away because this now repels them. And so that lowers the energy even more. And so we have to add this shift into the equation. And then there was all these papers trying to assess the significance of this. So in this famous 98 paper, the result was that, let's say, in three dimensions, there's a big correction to this. So instead of power law, the gap becomes exponential, right? But then other people more recently suggested, Efforts himself, suggested that maybe there's no such thing. So the question is still open. Yes?
Can I ask, how do you know that delta E ball is going to be something finite, order one? Because it could be that you flip something and you create a cascade that could be in principle big.
Yeah, so in fact, using some, well, let me think. Okay. In fact, you create a lot of, according to this paper, you create a lot of excitations. Okay? Not a still finite number, because interactions do decay. Right? So it's not infinite range. Interactions do decay, so it's still finite number. But this number scales with energy. So the closer to the Fermi level, the bigger is this polaronic thing. And that's why, describe it correctly, and that's the reason for a big difference between the true DOAS and the upper bound for DOAS, okay? But this status of this is not clear, and many people then try to verify that numerically, because different theories predict different results. None of them is a controlled theory. I mean, they all make sense physically, but there's no way to judge. So many people did numerics. It's also hard. Numerically is also hard, you know, because you need to find the ground state of a system with many, many metastable states. What drew my attention, I was actually not even, I thought, okay, it's a hard problem. Why should I even, but recently there was, I found this paper. I was working on something else, but anyway, I found this paper, which seems like a breakthrough in numerics. So this is paper by Möbius and company, okay, which did enormous systems, numerically, enormous, okay? So we had, for example, this is three-dimensional. It's a system of billion sites, so 1,000 by 1,000 by 1,000. Okay, so this is not really, we're using some tricks. Nobody can find ground state of such a big system by any reason, by any, you know, algorithm. So we're using some tricks, but I mean, we get the result, and this is what the result says, okay? So people who are experts in numerics may make their own judgments. I just look at it, take it.
What, yeah. But does it distinguish the function of the
distribution function of energies? I don't think we studied.
They
have one very big system. Yeah.
And the average of the position, what do they do?
I think for such system, it's basically self-averages. But I don't know. This paper is the algorithm is very involved. Okay, it's very tricky algorithm.
But you sample a lot of native stable space.
I'm not responsible for this. Okay.
I mean, you're not in the ground state, you're in some native stable state.
Yeah, right.
Actually, it's not even a metastable state because you cannot find a metastable state.
Okay. All these questions right now you can ask. Ask this
phantom,
guy.
Phantom states.
You can ask this guy. Okay. Okay. He just tells it. He did the numerics to the best, and this guy is doing it for all his life. Okay. So he's supposed to know what he's doing, but okay. Okay. I don't know, is he coming on this workshop?
He's coming.
Okay. So when he comes, you can ask him what's going on. Okay. But I mean, the result looked like remarkable, astounding. It's astounding achievement, like a breakthrough. Nobody can do such systems. He can. Okay. He says he can. Okay. So let's look at the results. So this is for 3D. It's just like to wait here, but so for 3D. So. Okay, this is energy, this is density of states, and this is double logarithmic scale. So LG is not natural logarithm. It's a logarithm base 10. So this is three orders of magnitude. Nobody can do this numerically so far. Okay, so it's an enormous range. Most of the simulations stop somewhere here.
Two and a half.
Okay, most simulations here. So he says the following. That results, actually, you have to be really careful when you study Coulomb gap. Because the results sensitively depend on your choice of disorder. For example, if your disorder is too weak, so disorder is this B. It's a width of density of states. So. So this is energy, this is G. B is this guy. It's the width of the original density of states. And this is B over 2.
B over 2.
You saw this paper before?
Hmm?
You saw this paper?
No, I just know this or not. Because we saw this paper, so
okay. No, I sent to you. I don't know if you sent to. Okay, anyway. So anyway, so B is like A for people in experts and audience. It's like half of A. So anyway, if disorder is very weak, then you get to a completely different regime. Because let's say if there is no disorder and you're on a cubic lattice and half filling, the electrons just form a crystal. So there is a gap, but it's a hard gap. Okay, and indeed for this curve, there's very little. Okay, so disorder has to be big. Okay, and people before thought that one may be enough, but one is not enough. Apparently, he says disorder has to be large enough. You have to work with 3 or maybe 10. Okay, so range, the ratio of disorder in Coulomb interaction shouldn't be 1; should be like 10. Okay, and then you have to push to really low energies, one decade further than anyone else has done before. Okay, and then you see that. So let's compare with Frushkovsky. So if this is a double logarithmic plot, so power law should be a straight line. In this case, in two dimensions, so straight line and slope too. And you see that the lines, a different disorder, do have a slope, but only asymptotically. But here, very, very low energies, all the disorders actually, even this small disorder thing, seem to come to the same universal. Seems like it has the right slope. But smaller than Frushkovsky by a factor of 2 or 3. That's his conclusion. Okay. Okay. So he says that basically, okay, Frushkovsky is correct. Ultimately, it is a power. So there is no exponential. He doesn't find any exponential yet. It's a power law, square. Maybe coefficient is off. Okay. So.
And how good is this square?
Well, I mean.
Well,
very good.
Take some imagination.
No. Well, they couldn't mean it was cure. Couldn't be that, actually, because theoretically, at any value, any large value of P, at small enough energy, there should be a deviation.
Of course.
From the slope.
Of course.
The larger V is.
You mean finite size effect?
The No, not finance. Just deviation.
Okay, well, maybe you can tell me.
Still talk about this.
My talk is not about this. My talk about this. Because I was actually interested in graphene ribbons and things like that. So I was looking at 1D. And on 1D, remember, gap is logarithmic. So how to check it? One good way to check it is to plot not G, but 1 over G versus the logger. If it's correct, it should be a straight line. So this is his plot for this. And it's a straight line. So I said, great. Okay. So the problem here is, okay, 1D, the finite size effect is in 1D you can simulate very long systems, obviously. Okay, much easier than in 3D, right? But the effect is only logarithmic, so you still have to have large system to pick up the log. Okay, so you still have to have, in this case, 20 million sites. So he has 20 million sites, so he has 5 decades, and it's a beautiful straight line. So great, I said, okay, well, everything's done, Efrashkovsky is correct. Okay, let's move on, except. I said, okay, let's just look at the coefficient of this logarithm. Okay, so somehow Möbius didn't estimate this coefficient, so I just took a ruler, and put it on a plot, and you see actually all these curves have the same slope, and this slope is 1.95 plus minus 0.05. Great, so it's 2. I'm looking at the theory. Theory says it's 1. Okay, I said, what's going on? I rechecked all the equations. The theory says it's 1. Okay, so this is, okay. Actually, there was one paper by these people who predicted 2. Okay, but also we used some basically kind of mean field algorithm, and just the sheer number or sheer volume or mass of people in this category exceeds this. So this, I put a frame around it, because this is like the, I guess, consensus, seems like a consensus result. And this consensus result is different from numerics. And when you say number 1.95 plus minus 0.05, I mean. So that's what I wanted to start, let's stimulate my, well, part stimulate my work. So what to do in this talk is try to consider this problem again. Do it as best as I can, rigorously, as I can. And then compare and see what's going on with me. Yeah.
I never quite understood this fascination with the quantitative number. From the numerics, you only extract how many sites have such and such energy within the Coulomb gap. But we know very well that these sites come in clusters, say sites with slightly positive energy are clustered sites with slightly negative energy.
We don't know that.
Well, in the
paper, but anyway, continue. Yeah.
Davis, Lee, and Rice, you see that.
They sort of saw. If you look at this,
so but this anyway, has what? Never been established, right? But if there is such clustering, then in a sense, you shouldn't really count every site in such a small cluster as independent, but you can only put one charge there.
Density of states is well defined quantity. I have a Hamiltonian.
Yeah, sure, it's well defined, but
okay, this Hamiltonian. I ran my computer. I find all these sites. I do a histogram. This is the result.
Of course, yeah. But
all these steps are well defined.
Yes, but every mean field theory will miss this cluster effect because it cannot treat it. No?
Exactly.
And also the cluster effect tells you that physically, in each cluster, you can only use one site to put an extra charge because once you put the charge there, the other sites are high up in energy. So what you do with numerics, you get some well-defined result, which physically probably has not much meaning. Say this C equals 2, doesn't really.
Okay.
Do your rigorous theory take care of this?
My rigorous theory is a rigorous theory. I mean, there is a Hamiltonian, there is a calculation, there is a result.
I have to add that in 2D, we check numerically that there is clustering.
I'm not arguing, I'm going to do calculations here.
Okay.
Mathematical calculations. Okay, and not mean field, by the way. Okay, other questions?
I'm just saying that you shouldn't blame mean field too much, but we'll see what you do.
I mean,
Yeah.
That was the best thing on the market. Yeah, so I'm comparing it, and it doesn't match. So what can I do? Okay. So let's consider 1D, because seems like maybe 1D is simpler. You know, usually one-dimensional problems are simpler, because, well, they're simpler, right? So this non-trivial thing, how dangerous it is in 1D, the fact that you have this possible Polaronic shift, okay? Actually, it's not dangerous, okay? It is known to people who know, right? That one way to estimate is that you can ask a question or calculate how many actually these transitions, these dipole transitions, will be excited on average at a given. Okay? And so it's this number is big. This Polaronic atmosphere, whatever we call it, is only big in 3D. Okay, it goes as 1 square root E in 3D. Okay? In 2D it's already a number of order 1. And in 1D, they're not excited at all. It's one over one.
Rarely,
right? So with this accuracy, and my theory will be basically leading log, okay? With logarithmic accuracy, my theory will be controlled by a logarithm, by a large logarithm. So with leading log, there is no such effect at all. Now let me explain quickly why the scaling occurs. So it's actually, you can do it in one line. So basically, consider a given dipole. I'll call this transition following the dipoles. So this guy moves. So this is my primary site to which I injected an electron. Okay. Consider a point in space some distance s away. And let's ask the question. When this dipole transition of size r will be excited? Well, it will be excited if it has enough, if its excitation energy is low enough, such that the disturbance push it over, right? So it will be excited if energy of interaction of that dipole with a new electron, right, is larger than excitation energy of that dipole. So basically, this dipole has to be close enough. It has to be a distance smaller than e squared of r over energy. Okay? The interaction decay, so it has to be close enough, close within this range. Right? Am I saying anything correct? Repeating correctly? Okay. So then, but density of states of those dipoles is another non-trivial result of it. The density of states of those, we call it compact dipoles, is constant. So total number of those dipoles, compact dipoles, will be, basically in 3D, for example, it will be total number, and so n I call it, it will be density of states times the energy strip, times this s to the power d, to volume. Okay, so in 3D, you see you have 1 power in numerator and 3 halves in denominator. So it goes as 1 square root e, so it diverges. But in 2D, it's e over epsilon. It's actually number of order 1. And in 1D, it's not important at all. Well, then you have to be more careful. You shouldn't confine yourself to compact dipoles. You have to sum over all dipoles. The result is logarithm still small. Okay? So the main enemy is not the main problem which precluded controlled theory of Coulomb gap in higher dimension is not there in 1D. In 1D, Efrash-Shklovsky criterion is both necessary and sufficient. To be leading log, with the leading log.
Okay, the mean field is supposed to be better at hiding.
Okay, I'm not talking about mean field yet. I'm just talking about what kind of criteria or conditions determine the ground state. So there is a hierarchy of this condition. There's Efrash-Shklovsky, kind of first order. Then there's dipoles, then there's quadrupoles and octopoles and things like that. Okay? In high dimensions, you have to take into account at least dipoles. In 1D, just the first order, just the charges. OK, so great, right? So I'm explaining because people may have experience in 2D and 3D, but in 1D may be slightly unusual. So I'm pointing out the differences. OK? I mean, you know this, but of course. But OK, any questions? So the main enemy is not here. That's why maybe we can do something. OK, so let's just look at Frischkowski criterion again. OK? And what I'm going to do, basically, I'm going to do a mapping. I'm going to map the problem of a Coulomb gas on the problem of statistical mechanics. Statistical mechanics of certain gas, or certain gas of fictitious particles. OK, so let me explain how it goes. So stability criterion says the distance between the particles of energies E prime and E double prime has to be larger than something. So this numerator here is just, it's a theta function. Just says that the particle has to be on opposite sides of the Fermi level. Okay? Otherwise, so graphically, if I draw energy and position, it's a very simple geometric interpretation. It basically says that if here is a particle with, let's say, electron with energy E double prime, then it essentially does excluded volume. This is a drawing from Ephraim's paper of 1996. So this shaded area, you're not allowed to have holes there. OK? So this leads to depletion. OK. What I'm going to do is I'm going to write this constraint in equivalent form as a Boltzmann factor. OK? So I introduce basically hardcore potential, which is zero far away. But within this radius, it's infinite. So this condition is that as though you have a Boltzmann factor in only allowed configuration, this Boltzmann factor is non-zero, contribute. So basically, then, the density of states is proportional to the fact that to the probability of finite configuration if all these constraints are satisfied, which means the total.
I do not quite understand you. You say that you translate in statistical physics. Doesn't it mean that you should write just Gibbs with total Hamiltonian?
Yes. It's an excellent.
So why Boltzmann factor?
Boltzmann and Gibbs is the same. I think Gibbs did it first. That's why I call it Gibbs. I should call it the Gibbs factor. OK, sorry. Or Boltzmann factor. Boltzmann
you
Gibbs.
Write all the sum and.
Yes.
Yeah.
OK.
So this is for one pair. You have to sum over all pair to make sure they're all satisfied. And that's the total weight.
Sorry.
OK? All right. OK. So here's my mapping now. OK. So I remember in 1D, so particles live on a line. And they have different energies. So you can think about energy as a label, as a color. So let's say discretize the energies in a certain way, with some interval delta E. So then you have a multi-component gas. Energies correspond to color. These particles live on a line. And they have this hardcore repulsion. It's kind of interesting, hardcore gas. So the hardcore radius, it depends on the energy. It depends on the color. OK? OK? And then this partition function is just this. You have this Boltzmann factor, and they integrate over the positions of these particles. Yeah, positions of the particles. OK, and you have to weight it with their, what they call in statistical mechanics, fugacities.
Do you have electron and holes there?
Yeah, electron and holes. So these energies go from minus something to from minus, let's say, B to plus B. Yeah.
The ensemble of epsilon I has to be self-consistent. No, epsilon I has to be the sum of E squared over R I J and sigma of epsilon J or something. You don't enforce it.
No, because I've fallen. The idea is that, of course, I think if I understand your question correctly, actually, it was on my slide. If I understand your question correctly, you're saying that the energies are not just bare energies, but they're shifted by? Shifted by these Coulomb terms. OK. So there's no problem with this, again, to be leading order in introduction, because this term is bounded and small, much smaller than this guy. Okay? So first thing. And second, the relation between this and this is linear. So the Jacobian of transformation from bare energies, okay, to the full energies is one. Okay? So this is actually goes back to, again, to Alexis' 76 paper. So
yeah,
but we have this is completely kosher. I assure you, this is completely kosher.
It's kosher for
the disorder. Oh yeah, so kosher for the question we're interested in. So the deviations will be seen. Okay, I need to draw again. Then here it will far away. This will spill over. Okay, but here far away from edges of the spectrum. This is correct the leading order in 1 over.
I don't know, I'm trying to. Am I right that this is an annealed average in the sense that the randomness of the. You're adding over the randomness?
No, it's a quenched disorder.
Is it quenched?
Quenched disorder. In so original problem, fixed, not time dependent.
But in your ensemble average, you're doing.
No, the statistical.
My statistic, that's the idea. You map. That's my idea. I map the problem of quench disorder on the problem of anneal disorder.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
And then I can use all the methods.
Did you count on
it? Anneal disorder comes from the fact that
he's averaging at the same level.
The statistical weights are the same. Anyway, this is completely kosher, and it goes back to 1976 effort. Okay? So there's no more content in my mapping than in his equation 20. It's absolutely the same. So he writes it that basically statistical weight is integral of energies with constraints that stability criterion satisfy. I'm just rewriting these constraints as a Boltzmann factor, that's all. They are mathematically identical.
Just so that I understand, in the details are the position of the particles. Is somewhere inside the
positions are x.
So in the second line, it's somewhere in the thetas or in the deltas are the positions.
Yeah. Yeah. So positions in this positions side are sides k. So k is here, and x is there. But here k are ordered left to right. Okay. Here I'm allowed to be all these permutations. So x will be independent particles. That's why I need to divide by factorials as usual in statement. So, but these are in the limit of these, they're identical. So far I haven't done anything new. I'm just rephrased the problem in another language. This is in this Boltzmann factor.
No. You will then use your equation for the population of one particle in a state.
Right.
Let me then try to follow precisely the same route and calculate the distribution function for deltas.
It's possible, I think. It's possible to do, but I haven't done it. I'm pretty confident it's possible.
I'm asking if it's already thrown away because you've thrown away the dipole, so and if you get some non-intrinsic constant, or you will still get something to reach.
I'll get something.
And the something is trivial.
Well, I mean, trivial from the, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, what's trivial? I don't know.
Still use.
Sorry, but I still don't
know. I will, okay. Okay, all right. Since, what time is it? There's no clock on this. Okay.
There is no time limitation. Just go on.
Okay.
Go.
I will reproduce numerics. How about that?
Okay.
It will be happy end. Will be complete happy end at the end.
I don't understand.
For me.
So, for example, this second line. Principally, you're just counting the configurations of pair disorder which are stable, no?
Yes, exactly right.
Yes, so what is, so what about the configurations? What about the bare configurations that are not stable when you remove a few charges to make a stable state? But what about those?
Okay, I showed that this is, my argument was, my first argument was that you only have to include the first transitions. Secondary transitions give sub-leading corrections.
Right.
Okay. So that's why I'm only imposing them here.
It's logarithm, right? Logarithm is usually
exactly right. Exactly right. I'm going to do it. Right. I have to do it because of the divergent log.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe I should move on or. Okay. So I wrote my partition function. As I said, this is no new thing. I just rephrased the old equation in a new terminology. But it's now change your frame of mind. Now you can start thinking about thermodynamics. Start thinking about what people know and what kind of tools we have in the thermodynamic toolbox, okay? And so you start thinking about pressures and temperatures, things like that. Okay, my temperature is actually here completely fictitious, and it will drop out from the final result because my pressure multiplies the hard core, which is infinite. So if you multiply infinity by anything, it's still infinity. So don't be afraid. Okay. This temperature made an appearance, but you can say it to one or anything, okay? And I'm still talking about zero temperature. I'm still talking about zero temperature. So what I did, I mapped a zero temperature problem with quench disorder, okay, on a finite temperature problem with anneal disorder. And this is, so far, it's still good mapping, rigorously justified by logarithm, okay? But let's now, okay. So now we have this multi-component gas. We have partition function. And then we want to calculate something. And what we want to calculate is density of states. How do you extract density of states? Aha. Well, you look in the thermodynamic textbook, they tell you. You need to get the pressure, calculate the pressure of that gas. Okay. And divide it by temperature, I call it gamma. Okay, and then take derivative of pressure, gamma, with respect to chemical potential. That's density. Okay, now I use this for fugacities. Fugacities is the exponential of chemical potential. So log fugacity is mu, is chemical potential. So this is dp over d mu. This is density. Okay, so this is the exact relation. Let me just show it, because maybe a little bit unfamiliar for some. So let me show that it does work. Let's use an ideal gas. What do we get in ideal gas? Okay, in ideal gas, we know the equation of state. Pressure is equal to temperature times density. So P over T is just total density. Okay, so then if I do this derivative, okay, basically then I get the differential equation. I don't get it right away. I get a differential equation for my density. So you can probably do it in your head. This differential equation d log n over d log w is equal to 1. But this differential equation is very easy to solve. It just says that, obviously, n is proportional to w. Okay, so the coefficient of proportionality from normalization will be this discretization, my bin for the energies. Okay, and then setting w, the fugacity, to the bare density of states, divided by w, I get expected result. So if you have ideal gas, no interactions, or in original problem. If you have no interactions, the density of states is equal to bare density of states. Okay, that works. Okay, so no problem. Okay.
And temperature expansion.
Huh?
And temperature.
I don't have a temperature in the original problem.
Yeah,
my temperature is always zero in the original problem.
Yeah, but when you introduce this.
Here, temperature is always low because my hardcore, I have infinite interaction.
Of course, but this result will be obtained in the approximation
okay.
of
right. This is just an example. This is just to show how it works in principle. Okay, I'm just saying this formula is correct formula from thermodynamics. I'm just showing you that it works. Okay, it has nothing to do with the problem yet. Well, it only have to do with the problem with no interactions, which is, of course, not interesting. Okay? The interesting part is interactions. So now I have to calculate this pressure. Okay? So I have a partition function. Okay, so I can calculate this pressure. I just need to calculate partition function. It's a function of L. Take the thermodynamic limit, take a logarithm, that's my pressure, and then solve this equation. Well, it's easier said than done, right? Because now we have an interacting system. How do we calculate pressure of interacting system? Well, before I go, I'll do it. But before I do it, we can continue a little bit with the generalities. There is another exact result we can use too. I will use it basically to very quick way. It's a very quick way to derive this logarithmic Coulomb gap. A mean field, basically. Okay, how does it go? There's the virial theorem. Which is, okay, so this pressure, for ideal gas, it was just density. Okay, but of course, in the gas of repulsion, there's the corrections. Okay. So this exact statement is this. This correction is bilinear in density times this coefficient g, and times this hardcore radius r. What is g? G is a two-body correlation function. Okay, so basically the probability to find two particles at given distance r. Okay, so I'm interested in g just outside the hardcore. This is the exact theorem. It looks like kind of the expansion, you know, like virial expansion, n, then n squared, then cubed. But this is not an expansion, because here, g is exact g. This is a starting point for expansion. But if it's g is exact, it's exact. OK. So how does it g looks like? Well, so I'm basically replacing the problem of calculating pressure, hard problem, which is hard problem, to another hard problem, calculating a correlation function. OK? So I mean, it's possible to do it for some very simple models. For example, you can solve exactly the problem of Tonks gas, which is a hardcore repulsion of the same radius. So then you can get a correlation. It kind of looks like this. I mean, zero, of course, within the hardcore, because particles not allowed. And then eventually goes to one, but it goes away in some funny way. OK, so the number I get is this value at this point, just outside. As you see that, it's kind of larger than one. OK? So this exact result for that model. Yeah, I should maybe, because maybe it looks kind of weird for some people who spend too much time, most of their time thinking about quantum mechanics. Maybe it's weird that it goes to finite value rather than to zero. Because we think about quantum mechanical problem with hardcore, the wave function, of course, goes to zero. So g would be zero outside. But this is not quantum mechanical problem. It's a classical problem. Classical gas. And there is just the opposite. When you can insert those hardcores, you kind of pile up the particles just outside. So this is actually for this problem, classical problem, it's larger. Well, it's the exact result. Okay. But how am I supposed to calculate it? Okay? It's hard. So let's not do it for now. Okay? Let's try to do some kind of, first of all, let's say, well, can we do mean field? So what is mean field? Mean field is basically a statement that there are no correlations. That's in a nutshell, the statement of mean field. So if there are no correlations, it just, in regard to the correlation functions, this means just, OK, well, it has to be zero here within hardcore, because particles not allowed. But outside, it's just immediately equals to one. That's a gas without any correlation. OK, so this g would be equal to one. Okay, so then my gamma will be n plus n squared. So I'll have to write another differential equation for my fugacity and stuff like that. I can do it. Again, it's simple. You can solve it. Well, not solve. You can transform the differential equation into integral equation. This is this equation. And if you take continuum limit, it will be like this. Okay, doesn't that look familiar? Okay. This equation, okay, so g is g naught times some exponential, some integral, and this integral is a integral over g itself times the hardcore radius. Okay, what it is this self-consistent equation of f's. except it's a regional self-consistent equation of tuples. 1976. I'll explain. Okay, now this equation you can solve. We solved it. So Reich and Effer solved it. The result is one over log. Okay. So basically, this logarithm, this excluded area, this A is the essential excluded area. This excluded area is D over E is log divergent. That's why I have logarithmic suppression. Okay, and the coefficient is 2. And numerics gives 2. Exactly. So I say right thing on the first try. Because later, we decide to modify it. So this was a 96. It was 80, and from 80 on. We put the factor 1/2 in front of it. Right? So the argument was given to avoid double counting. And I'll show you this argument in a second. But I found this interesting footnote in this paper. Where this, after this argument we give, I said, in essence, this rule is only empirical. For example, in a region where G, so density of state, differs from G naught, we can use the perturbation theory and show that first correction, which falls from self-consistent equation, is undervalued by a factor of 2. However, at low energies, the result of the corrected one better agrees with computer experiment. So basically, this factor was inserted by hand, but it doesn't even reproduce the perturbation theory. OK, now we can talk about this argument. This argument is here. I think it's kind of subtle. So I don't think in the time allotted we can. But at this point I don't see even the point of discussing this argument because it's mean field. Okay, so we can argue what is the correct mean field theory, but the more basic question is unclear at the moment. Why even talking about mean field? Because there's the suppression, the Coulomb-Gate effect, the Coulomb-Gate goes to zero, is a non-perturbative statement. Strongly non-perturbative state. Density of state vanishes. So this excluded area is huge, logarithmically divergent. Why even talking about mean field here? Okay. So to get ahead of yourself, turns out that sort of these correlations, so there are correlations, but these correlations are kind of built up gradually, you'll see, logarithmically, and that's why.
Well, let me ask you, if you go
high
dimensions.
I cannot. You maybe can, I cannot.
No. Like if one goes to high dimensions, then it also goes to exclude the dipoles, which basically, you put on the school's requirements in this paper. Then what? You're saying that the infield equation was wrong?
Well,
because in what we did, that is practically not specific about the dimension.
Yeah. If I derive mean field theory using Virial theorem, in a statement of absence of correlations, to me, natural statement is that, well, it goes to one, then there is no reason to insert this 1/2, even in higher dimension.
Can you simulate?
But this is a mean field theory, so in higher dimensions, I'm not sure we have to talk about mean field theory. There's a problem there.
Right, but the question, the statement about the Hartree potential is pretty much robust.
Yeah.
Where do you expect, in which place in the statement you would expect that the numerical factor magically changes from 1/2 to 1?
If you do the same thing in higher dimensions, you'll get exactly self-consistent equation without 1/2 in all dimensions. And it agrees with perturbation theory, by the way.
You just mentioned many papers, but there is a right Mogilansky work.
Yeah, I mentioned it too. We also have one.
Okay.
They agree.
So you have two and they have one.
We all agree. Reich, Mogilansky, Baranovsky, Shklovsky, Efras. We all say it will, after 1980, we say it's one. Right? Okay. There are some. people who, okay. Yes, 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 except, except, yeah.
So if I understand, now you are applying a new field to solve a new model.
I'm not going to apply a new field because I'm said, why don't we talking about this new field? There are correlation system. We really have to forget about this. Okay, stop arguing, making arguments, empirical arguments, not empirical arguments. We have to really sit down and calculate something. Have to start the problem from scratch. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to solve it from scratch, without arguments, by mathematics. Okay? Okay? Because in 1D there are methods to do that. Okay? So there's this powerful method called transformatrix. This is the first step. Okay? So basically, instead of infinite system right away, you consider finite size L and see how the partition function changes as you increase the length. Okay, so z of L will be a partition function of size L, and what I need to do is basically write the differential equation. So I add a small slice here. This small, if I add small slice, then I can put additional particles there. Okay, so there's a positive derivative. However, there is hardcore constraint. So if I put a particle here at some energy, it excludes the volume. So this area will not be available to other particles. So the differential equation is like this. Derivative of a partition function of a strip is proportional to, well, fugacity, and but also proportional to partition function of this area, the white area. Okay? Unfortunately, this is not a closed equation, because if it was this, if I could neglect the excluded area, it would be derivative of z is equal to z, it's exponential trivial. Okay? Here, you have one quantity on one left-hand side, and another quantity on the right-hand side because of exclusion. Okay? So there's, unlike hardcore or Tong's gas, where there's additional tricks you can do, here there's no exact solution. What can I do? Well, I can get approximate closure using RG technique. Because this was, I couldn't do it exactly because I was doing, was too greedy. I shouldn't try to eliminate the excluded volume in one big step, because the excluded barrier is huge. It's like question measure. I have to eliminate it in small slices. Okay? So the idea is this. So you have some cutoff, energy cutoff in the problem, which is originally with B. Now it will be running cutoff, so it will be lambda. Okay, I will write my transfer matrix equation, and I'll see how these equations are modified upon a small change of cutoff. So basically, I integrate out this small slice delta gamma. Okay. So the point is that logarithmic, if I consider particles at the cutoff, which I want to eliminate, the excluded area is small. Because logarithm diverges at the lower limit. So the particle, so this is a big area, because the particles is here somewhere in the middle. If I consider particles at the cutoff, the excluded area is this gray thing, which is under condition of strong disorder, it's small. So I can do it perturbatively. So this is a perturbative RG. So I write perturbative RG for the pressure. Well, I remind you, gamma is a pressure, or pressure divided by temperature. And those fugacities. Okay. So then again, it's simple enough. I can solve it. And this is important coefficient 2. And I made sure I checked this 2. There's 2 there. So I solve the equation. What do you get? Again, self-consistent equation, except it does have 2 in it. Okay. Now my RG was perturbative, but it goes to weak coupling, because this fugacity is basically density of states. Remember, the density of states is decreased logarithmically. So it starts off small, but it becomes even better. So the coupling constant of my RG goes to 0. So it goes to, it's everything's controlled.
but as a matter of fact, it's not a single charge tree, right? As a matter of fact, you have gamma, you have W in the next order of the...
Yeah, so this is leading order. So if you had plus over W squared.
No, it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that even if you have multi-charge RG, and in one sense it goes to recoupling, there is no guarantee that there is no strong coupling point.
All my couplings go to zero at all energies. I mean, this. Okay. So I promised you happy end, and this is a happy end. Okay. C is this is equation is correct except C is equal to 2. And the numeric says 2. So problem of Coulomb gap in one dimension has been solved. Okay. So unfortunately, this technique. I mean, natural question is. Okay, can I go to higher dimensions? I can't. These techniques are specific to 1D. And in higher dimensions, the problem, how much more difficult problem with dipoles, which you have no idea how to treat. Okay? So the only like vague ideas as I have, maybe you can go to higher dimensions by some kind of epsilon expansion, but that's of course, you know. So in 1D, I guarantee you that's this the final word. In higher dimensions, it's interesting open problems
still. Still, can we discuss which physics is actually?
Okay, let's.
No, I'm asking.
Ah, say again.
What kind of experiment you would propose except numerics?
Well, I mean, the most trivial experiment would be, or most, it's not trivial. It is not trivial. Is imagine density of states, let's say by tunneling or by,
but,
I think.
By tunneling from where?
Actually, tunneling, I think, will be a problem. Because if you have metallic electrode nearby, it will screen. Okay? And my whole theory is based on logarithms. So I need large distances without any screening. So I cannot allow too much metal nearby.
So what else?
So I thought a little bit about this. If you have any other suggestions, I will be grateful.
But,
to know.
But
the best I come up with, it's photo emission.
But this is the same problem?
No. A photo emission can, in principle, be done on non-conducting surfaces. There are tricks, but, I mean, this is tricky, but. And this gives you a result in a single shot. Instead of, see, the Coulomb gap is, of course, a random. And random energies in different places. So if you do, like, say, STM, it's kind of hopeless because you have to measure density of state here, measure density of state here. Each time you have just some levels, and you have to do a histogram. So tunneling from the in high dimensions, tunneling from a big electrode. So you have, for example, your gate electrode. You have here your indium oxide or something, insulator, the Coulomb gap. Okay, you have another electrode, and if you make sure that the tunneling conductance, tunneling barrier between electrode and the sample is higher than the conductivity of the sample itself, so you have to have a high, then you have tunneling everywhere, in principle. Okay, your barrier has to be super uniform, of course. Then you can do it. So in 1D, I think if you do photo emission instead, so you have a wire. I'm not gonna claim it's easy, but it's not my problem. Okay, I mean, it's a problem for experimentalists who claim that they can do photo emission these days, much better than before. So, photo emission is basically also a measure of single particle density. So you send a photon. And inject an electron and measure its energy. And photons are everywhere. So, in fact, the very first claim of Coulomb gap indeed came from photo emission back in 1985. But I don't think it was really convincing. And now things improved. So maybe it's time to renew this effort.
Uh-huh.
clusters in two dimensions. Okay, could you have a model that includes all these type of things, just having an orphan interaction, a much more complicated interaction, but still you could.
I haven't tried.
But in principle, it's conceivable.
I don't know. It's.
And the second question is.
See, I use, for example, transfer matrix.
Yeah, but
so the transformer doesn't work into D.
Yeah, but you could have simulated.
So maybe it's possible, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, but you could have simulated the effective model, and it's a very fast and easy simulation.
I think it's probably the same thing.
No, because once the disorder is annealed, that you and your it's a 1D model without any.
Right, but in 2D, as I said, the dipole transitions are important.
Yeah.
So it
will show up in your interaction, in your effective interaction.
So I can imagine the following. Maybe it's interesting for people who do numerics. Basically interaction, simulation of Coulomb interactions, which if you find the good ground state, takes into account both the charges and dipoles and all the other conditions. Okay, and then do another simulation with just the hardcore repulsion. And compare. That would be interesting. But I think it has to be done numerically at this point.
You must forgive me, but the question which I have is why this factor of two is important for anything? Because you are multiplying, when you are measuring the time in this state, you are multiplying the
sink
by some factor which is not known.
Like no, but I can find a ratio. So if my density state is like this, an idea is that I can always normalize.
No, you cannot because the time is not experimentally dependent on it.
Okay. Well, if there is this problem, then yes. If somehow you manage to take it, take care of matrix element, then.
Okay, I guess the less offensive part of the question will be the problem. In the theory of the fact traditions, the factors in front of the logarithms are important because the ratio between them gives you the exponents of the fact traditions which are measurable. Now, is it possible to express any physical quantities not associated with autonomic returns of the factor which you found?
I don't know, maybe. But there's a well-defined problem. There's a Hamiltonian,
understand,
and there's a solution.
I understand that, but so. it is as meaningless as the calculation of the cutoff in the logarithm in the recalculation, because you don't know what group of conductivity and what the cutoff of the logarithm.
Okay.
Misha?
Yeah.
May I ask some word?
Yeah.
Trying to defend myself.
Yeah. Definitely.
I want to remember why this factor changed.
But we agree with your original paper, 1976.
Yes, I understand. But I want to.
So you don't need to defend.
But you don't agree with my current point.
Right, I guess so, yeah.
So maybe I'll tell why it changes. Your density of states is modified density of states occurs to be larger than previous one.
Smaller.
Modified.
Smaller.
Smaller. By factor of two.
The effect is smaller. The effect is larger.
Well, the density of states.
Density of states suppressed more.
Density of states suppressed more. Yeah. Density of states is. Smaller.
Smaller in my
Smaller.
In my.
That's okay. Yeah. Now we get a first algorithm to calculate the density of states that was larger and obeyed the second case and still was correct in terms of. All condition was fulfilled.
Okay.
It was the first algorithm we used. We did it because Professor Gelman and predicted in such a way. Suppose that it's 1979, right? Maybe. Suppose that we took the first particle. Then in the next cycle, randomly choose another particle. If it contradicts to the first particle, remove it and take random generator another until it was a kill. Then we put it here. Then we come to the next side and use random generator again. It should not contradict the existence of both of this particle. This was already final. On the right was final result. This was already okay. This particle shouldn't contradict to all this. And so on. Look, in all cases, I should like only on my left. Mm-hmm. Not while you like both on left and right.
No, I'm also doing transfer matrix. I'm doing exactly your algorithm because I'm doing transfer matrix, yes. Growing system in one
direction. Yes, but don't you see that this way I'll get density of state twice as large?
No, I don't see it.
I don't see it.
And I derive it mathematically and I get this result.
That's strange. I see that. This way, I'll get density of states twice as large, and it obeys all conditions.
So, okay, we can discuss maybe.
That's why it was.
Yeah, I want to discuss it more. I think I have an answer, but it's probably for private discussion. Because I'm doing exactly the same thing. I'm growing it in one direction.
Is there any relation between your RG, which I can understand, and that of Melnitsky?
Yeah, exactly. So, I didn't mention it. So, actually, I sort of mentioned it, but I didn't say it. So, indeed, there's a paper by Johnson and Melnitsky, which also said we're doing RG. And our results do not agree. We get C equal to 1. I get C equal to 2. I tried to look in their paper. Okay? So to get even the first this perturbative step, we have to sum infinite number of diagrams, even at the first step. I tried to evaluate those diagrams, I couldn't. I don't know why we disagree, but I can tell you this. The derivation of this RG takes literally 3 lines. So I can much easier check this map, which takes really 3 lines, than some infinite number of diagrams. So I don't know why, but I'm pretty confident in my result.
The transfer matrix is not RG.
Transfer matrix.
It's not that you are doing. You can put it in the form, but conceptually it's not.
Transfer matrix is the first step. First I write an equation, mm-hmm. but this equation cannot be solved immediately. So that's why I'm doing RG on that equation. That's what I'm doing. So I'm combining transfer matrix, and then to solve it, I use RG.
How is that you are using RG?
Okay. Is that? I mean, how many people interested in? I can.
Not other people will step out.
Okay.
Soon.
But basically, okay, I'm done. So I can answer all the questions, but I'm done with
No problem.
My talk, presenting my material. Okay. So let me answer you. So this is the equation. Mm-hmm. Okay, unfortunately, you have z of something on one side and z of something else on the other side.
But don't you express it in terms of the correlation function?
No. Okay. When I'm saying, okay, what this equation look like, okay, if I change the cutoff? Okay. So I expand all my areas there, in the small deviation and see how the form of the equation changes. What I see, the equation takes exactly the same form as this, except the parameters, the coefficients in these equations are modified. So, for example, with fugacities, modified by this.
Are you saying that you can do Cauchy integer independently on the Cauchy integer?
I don't know what that means.
Well, in the normal normalization process, you do basically the space cutoffs are related to the energy cutoffs, more or less.
Okay.
Now, here, basically.
There is no dynamics.
That's what I understand.
So there's no relation.
There's still a relation between the energy scale and the special scale. Right?
Okay. But I can show you the equations. They take half H. So that's why. I mean, I wondered, did I make a mistake? I mean, so many people say they get different result. I look at these equations over and over again, but I cannot make, I mean, it's 3 lines. So the whole calculation takes basically 1 page from start to end.
In any case, you can always go back and simulate the 1D model.
That's what they did.
And then you get the 2.
That's what they did.
No, that's the original model. That's the true. I mean, okay. The effective model is much more easy.
Okay.
So you cite the 2, you're going to see it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's possible even without tricks. Maybe it's with short, with box interaction, maybe it's possible for
No, sir, why do you transform matrix equation in the first place? Why don't you look simply for the formula of partition function and do exactly the rescaling for the energies?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's possible. That was my sort of derivation.
Okay.
Maybe I did it less elegantly as it can be done by later, but I got it this way.
Okay, I just want to understand why the instrumentality is important. Because if you are saying that you don't do the cutoff this way,
Okay. First of all, dimensionality is important because in high dimensions I have to worry about those dipoles.
That's understand. This is a question. We are talking about dimensions.
Okay. If now consider this restricted model, first order criterion only, nothing else. Okay. Then unfortunately. The coupling constant of my RG will not go to weak coupling. Instead of this, you'll have fugacity times energy to some power d minus 1, or divided by d minus 1. So basically, in the region of Coulomb gap, the coupling constant of my RG will be order 1. And so my perturbative RG is not justified. So what I can do, however, I think, maybe it's possible. I don't know if I want to do it, but. Whoever wants to do it, it may be possible to do epsilon expansion.
Misha, I have a question which might be, I don't know how much chance it is, but from simple physical considerations, if you have a system which is basically non-ergodic, I think you may find that it is that you will get a different result if you use a grand canonical partition function and a canonical partition function, because you cannot really put in electrons. So how can you use a grand partition function?
I'm not sure I understand. I'm interested in infinite system, thermodynamic limit, the density of states for infinite system.
Well,
so in which case, I guess, partition function, ground partition function.
I know what they're interested in.
But it will be interesting, for example, consider fluctuations. So if you have finite size system, the density of states will have fluctuations, right? So. Maybe you can calculate correlation functions or RMS fluctuations of them, things like that. So that'll be relevant for like tunneling to quantum dots and things like that.
Okay.
But for inference system, I don't immediately see what you're asking about, what you're worrying about.
I agree with Mike, and I think that this is indeed a problem of application of statistical physics to this problem. Because what I use was not statistical physics. It was just statement that the distribution of size should be such that there were maximum density of states obeying this condition. And this maximum is twice as large as the mass.
But if you write just perturbation theory.
Both of them obeys, both yours and mine, obeys, may be constructed in such way that obeys boundary condition, but it has different correlation functions.
We can discuss. I think I'm also maximizing the density of states because I don't impose any other conditions.
No. It's in framework of one condition. No. Misha, I'm speaking in framework of one condition.
Right.
But, I just want to understand. You have problems with this partition function already?
Maybe this, yeah.
Okay, no, these are identical.
Have you studied interaction one-hour square root of
x? I didn't, because there will be same problem with high dimension. The RG will not be recovered. So basically, controlled RG exists only for logarithms.
It's kind of question of first principles.
So if it's power law, it's already non-perturbative RG. And can I do?